Now, some preachers benefit from a captive audience. In this case, the Roman Christians benefited from a captive preacher. For two uninterrupted years, they have Paul in chains, confined to a single house at their disposal. No matter what day it is, when somebody says, "Hey, do you suppose Paul was home today?" The answer is, "I bet so. He can't leave. He's got to stay right there. We can go see him anytime we want. Know exactly where to find him, and he's got nothing else to do."
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
Good morning. You can do better. Good morning. How many of you are glad to be a child of God today? Amen. Very good. You know, I'm going to tell you starting out that I almost never tell jokes in a sermon. I usually rely on stories, anecdotes, personal experiences instead, things that have actually happened and can be presented sometimes in a humorous way, but I don't generally tell jokes. So I'm just giving you the heads up this morning. What I'm about to tell you is a joke. So don't be confused and think that it's a true experience. It's a joke. Is everybody with me? All right, good. I saw this sign. It said, "Ohio River Cruise, all expenses, $1. And I thought to myself, that is too good to be true, but what does it hurt to go and see? So I went to the address that was listed on the sign, and I was just about to knock on the door when I felt a sudden sharp pain on the back of my head. And the next thing I knew, I woke up tied to a log floating down the Ohio River. First thing I did was check my pocket. Sure enough, my wallet was gone. Second thing I did was to wonder how I could improve my situation, namely maybe get off the log and get on shore, and I started looking around, and lo and behold, just about 20 feet over to my right, there was Russ Thorne, tied to another log, floating down the river. Well, misery loves company, and sometimes a dry, humorous remark will alleviate the anxiety of a situation. So I hollered at Russ. I said, "Russ, do you suppose they're going to feed us on this cruise?" And Russ hollered back at me, "I don't know. They didn't last year." Once burned, twice shy. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep getting what you're getting. One of the definitions for insanity is to continue the very same practices, but to expect different results. Acts chapter 28, last chapter in the book of Acts. You all have stuck with me all the way through this, and although it has taken me almost all of this year, we are about to finish the book of Acts. And as I have said a couple of times going through, we could, and don't worry, I won't, but we could go back to chapter 1 and start over again and preach an entirely different sermon from each and every chapter. That much have I kind of picked and chosen among the riches that are available in this portion of God's Word. But we won't. We won't do that. We left Paul, last chapter, one of 276 souls, cold, tired, but alive, standing on the beach at Malta, watching the ship they had just bailed off of getting beat to pieces on the reef. The people of Malta, Luke says, were kind to them, by which I presume he means they brought them blankets and food and that kind of thing. And everyone was cold, so a fire was lit, and people began to gather firewood. And in case you didn't know, if you had your Bibles open to Acts chapter 28, you can follow along. I'm telling you all the things that are in the chapter that we didn't read about. They're gathering wood to throw on this fire, and the Apostle Paul pitches in, and he is gathering wood for the fire, and in the process, he gets bit by a snake. And the people of the island recognize the kind of snake that Paul was bitten by, and they develop this firm expectation, in just a few minutes, this man is going to swell up like a balloon and drop dead. That's what they think is going to happen to the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul does not, by the way, when I was talking with Michael about this chapter, she said it wouldn't matter if the snake was poison. If it bit her, she would die of fright before she could swell up. But Paul did not swell up, nor did he drop dead. Why was Paul unaffected by the bite of this snake, despite the expectations of the people who lived in the region and knew about the snake? For the same reason that Paul was not allowed to drown in the depths of the sea, for the same reason that Paul was not killed by the soldiers, even though they wanted to murder all the prisoners to keep there from being any escapes. Paul is not killed by the snake either, because God has put an appointment in his book, and Paul must go to Rome and stand before Caesar. The snake bite incident makes Paul something of a local celebrity here, so that when the castaways are taken into the homes of the local residents, Paul and his companions are taken into the home of Publius, who is one of Malta's leading citizens. And here, Paul's notoriety is increased even further because the father of Publius is in bed, dreadfully sick, and Paul prays for him, and the man is healed. While all this is going on, there is an Egyptian ship, which is apparently under wiser management than the vessel that Paul was on previously, because it has wintered on Malta and avoided the whole storm season. It is going to sail in about 3 months' time after Paul's shipwreck, which probably means that this better managed ship came to Malta full of cargo of one kind and another right at the onset of the storm season and unloaded and sold all their stuff and spent the storm season on land getting timber and hides and whatever else, so that when the time comes for safe sailing, their ship will be fully laden and ready to go. And when Paul and his companions get on that boat headed for the Italian mainland, the grateful household of Publius gives them gifts, making sure that Paul will have everything he's going to need for a time to come. They stop at Syracuse on the island of Sicily, and then they go on up to Rhegium there on the very tip of the toe of the boot of Italy, and then they kind of drop in here and there going up the coast of Italy until Paul is let off within easy walking distance of Rome. Word has traveled faster than the ships, and the people in Rome know that Paul is coming. The Christian people in Rome know that Paul is coming. They know who Paul is because people from places where Paul has preached, like Corinth or Athens, have moved to Rome. It was a fairly mobile society. And they have converted others to this new religion that they learned from Paul. And they have told people about Paul. And maybe they have even shared copies of some things that Paul had written. These people know who Paul is. And on his way to Rome, they come out to meet him in a steady stream, these Roman Christians. Paul is still in chains. He is still under the watch of Julius the centurion and his cohort of Roman soldiers. But at this warm greeting, he is much encouraged. You have to remember what you know about Paul. They didn't usually send out welcome wagons for him. Nobody welcomed Paul to a town, but after he had been there for a little bit, they got together in a big band like this to throw him out. or worse. But this time, these people know who he is and are excited that he is coming and come out to meet him. And Paul is encouraged. He enters Rome. He is allowed to rent a house at his own expense, a prospect no doubt made easier by the generosity of Publius. And he sets up housekeeping, free to have visitors, but still wearing chains, always watched over by at least one Roman soldier. So what does Paul do now that he has set up shop in Rome? You again have been with me from the beginning of this series, and you will remember several things, especially in the last few chapters, that will make this not a surprise. The first thing Paul does when he sets up shop in Rome is to invite the leaders of the Roman Jewish community to come and see him. And they do. And he tries with every tool of his disposal and all of his passion to persuade the Jews that Jesus Christ is the hope of Israel, to bring them to the gospel. These people don't know anything about Paul's troubles back in Jerusalem, but they do know about Christianity, which has beat Paul to Rome and which is currently growing fast in Rome. And they actually have a fairly low opinion of this new religion with which they are familiar. But they are willing to listen to what Paul has to say. And when they have listened, the result is that they begin to argue among themselves. And finally, not being able to agree with each other, they agree to disagree with Paul. And they begin to leave. And Paul offers the one parting shot. He says, boy, God, when he spoke through Isaiah, hit it right on the nose when he said of the Jewish people, they close their eyes lest they see, they close their ears lest they hear, and they close their hearts lest they understand, because if they saw and heard and understand, they would return to me and I would heal them. And how terrible would that be? They hear this word from Paul, and they leave arguing among themselves. And Paul's heart, which has long been broken for his people, is finally now at the end of a long road made whole. And he settles down for 2 years of preaching in chains to the Gentiles, who, unlike the Jews, will hear what he has to say. Now, some preachers benefit from a captive audience. In this case, the Roman Christians benefited from a captive preacher. For 2 uninterrupted years, they have Paul in chains, confined to a single house at their disposal. No matter what day it is, when somebody says, hey, do you suppose Paul was home today? The answer is, I bet so. He can't leave. He's got to stay right there. We can go see him anytime we want. Know exactly where to find him. And he's got nothing else to do but to talk to us about Jesus Christ. Chains and guards are probably what it took to hold Paul down to a single located ministry for this length of time. But the Roman Christians are the beneficiaries, and they get the gospel good and straight for 2 years from Paul. Now here, I think we see the hand of God more clearly if we pause for a moment and ask a couple of obvious questions. Since it appears that Christianity was already established in Rome before Paul got there, and there are so many other places where the gospel has not gone, what's the big deal about bringing Paul to Rome? Why not let him go off to some wild, unreached region? Since Christianity is apparently growing and spreading in Rome, there are people already doing that job. What is the big deal about going to all this trouble? And God went to a considerable amount of trouble to get Paul here in Rome if Christianity is already thriving and growing and spreading. Why bring Paul here? Where by some measures you could say he is not needed. Maybe that is true on the day that would be called today of Paul's arrival. But let me tell you what is about to happen to these Roman Christians. It is very, very close. Paul arrives in Rome about AD 62. I'll say a little bit more about that later. AD 62, very shortly, Rome will burn. It will be Nero's fire. But who will he blame? He will blame the Christians. And what will happen to them? This is the source of those stories that you know about the Colosseum and the lions and the murdering of children and the burning of people alive for torches in the emperor's gardens. And all of those things are about to happen to these Christians. And for 2 years, they get the preaching and the personal testimony and experience of a man who has already borne every kind of injustice and violence, privation for the sake of Jesus Christ. They will know everything that Paul has been through and why he thinks it is worth hanging on to Jesus Christ despite all that. And then they will suffer the wrath of an insane emperor. Paul arrived none too soon. So, 2 years. And then what? It gets a little cloudier for us. The book of Acts ends where I finished the reading today. Paul preached for 2 years uninterrupted to the Gentiles, and it's harder to get your information from that point forward. We know that Paul will be, in a fairly short time, killed by order of the emperor Nero. I think that that is not what brought the two-year period to a close, because if Paul quit preaching because Nero had him executed, I think Luke would probably have mentioned that, and he doesn't. Possibly, I think, likely, as Christianity fell more and more out of favor in Rome, Paul probably received stricter sentencing, was moved into an actual prison. Access to him became much more difficult. That is what I imagine happened. Others think that Paul was actually set free for a time and made that trip to Spain that he often talked about. And then was at some point rearrested and executed. There is time for that, just barely. Paul was shipped out of Jerusalem in AD 61. The trip and the wintering at Malta would have brought him to Rome early in AD 62. 2 years in the rented house would have carried him through to AD 64. The fire was in 65. Paul was killed in either 65 or 6. Those who really want him to go to Spain sometimes try to stretch the execution over into 67. I doubt that is so. It is known for sure that Nero committed suicide in 68. So let's assume that Paul died in 66. That left most of 2 years for Paul to do whatever it was he did. And whatever it was, I'm sure that it was exciting and intense, because Paul's life tended in that direction. And whatever it was, I'm sure that God made good use of it. But for whatever reasons, either Luke didn't write about it, or the writing didn't survive for us to read, so I will leave further speculation about the last 18 months of Paul's life aside and stick with what we know. Rented house, chains, guards, 2 years preaching to the Gentile Christians of Rome. He also wrote letters to some of those places to which he could no longer go, and gave words of advice to men like Timothy and Titus and Silas, who preached in churches he had founded, but to which he could no longer return. And in all this, at long last, the attention of the apostle to the Gentiles is given fully to the Gentiles. That last incident with the Roman Jews allowed Paul to turn that page. I want you to understand, this is not to say that God was through with the Jews. It is to say that he had other people for that job, and that Paul will no longer stir up the waters of those people's ministries. I bet the Apostle James never quit kicking himself for having let Paul get involved in that fiasco in Jerusalem. I expect that he, in retrospect, thought that that was not really that great an idea. God had people to preach to the Jews. And in every generation since, there have been people who preach the gospel of Jesus Christ to the Jews. And in each of those generations, there have been those among the children of Abraham who heard that preaching and gave their hearts to Jesus Christ. But Paul, at long last, preaches to the Gentiles with a whole heart, and look what happened. Christianity not only survived the Roman persecutions, Christianity conquered the persecuting Rome and used the Roman Empire as a transport mechanism to spread itself all around the world. That's what happened. It's always hard to work with the what ifs, the what might have happened. But judging from all the trouble God went to in this instance, I'm going to assume that it was important for Paul to spend those 2 years preaching to the Roman Christians before the hour of their persecution. And without Paul's preaching, things might have turned out differently. What if Rome had successfully stomped out Christianity in its infancy? Use your imagination. You can answer that question as well as I, but I, for one, am glad that God was so insistent about Paul keeping this appointment. Now, just a couple of final considerations to close out the book of Acts. Calling. Calling, in the Christian sense, is the funniest thing. It will lead you to greater efforts than you might ever have dreamed possible and take you to places you would never otherwise have gone, but it will also limit you. Paul's calling was for this people and not those people. Paul's intended destination was this place and not those places. The meat of Paul's work was this task and not all these other tasks. Will probably pay us to learn the easy way what Paul learned the hard way. It is not hardness of heart to attend to one's calling and leave other works for those to whom God has called them. Nor is it always wisdom to go with your heart, so to say. It is one thing for Paul's heart to break for the Jews. It is another for Paul to ignore his calling and direct his efforts in other directions. God will give each of us something to do. We need to do that thing with all our heart. But it is neither necessary nor wise for any of us to attempt to do all things. Can't. And I need to understand sometimes when I want people to get involved in a work because I'm excited about it, that God may have called them in a different direction. And I have to be okay with that. I have to be okay with them doing what God called them to do. And I have to trust that the thing God has called me to do will work in concert with the thing God has called them to do. And the things that God has called each of us to do will work in concert with all the things that God has called other people to do, because God is pretty good at arranging that concert. And when I stray from my calling in other directions, I throw in sour notes. Finally, things often look bad. Indeed, things often are bad. How easy would it be this morning for me to ask you to begin to narrate things that are bad in the world as it stands? Could you get started? Could you name a few things that are bad in the world as it stands? Probably the problem is, where would we quit once we got started? There are so many bad things out there. And we wonder, what great happening or upheaval would be required to change all the bad? Or at least to allow us as the community of Christ to prevail over it. Or to survive it. What would have to happen for us to get through all this darkness? Will it take an army? Will it take a natural disaster of hitherto unheard of proportions? Or will it take 2 years of the last 4 years of the life of an obscure political prisoner of whom most people have not heard and whose case is so mismanaged that nobody knows quite what to do with it. In God's economy, that is enough to change everything. Two of the last 4 years of Paul's life, those 2 years in what would be regarded suboptimal circumstances, in chains, confined to a single house, those 2 years are enough to change everything. Never doubt what God can do with one person's life. Never doubt what God can do with your life. Never doubt what God can do with only a portion of your life. Never, never make yourself believe, well, too much of my life is gone. There isn't enough left for God to make any difference. God can take the last fragment, a piece of the last fragment. God can take a little fragment of your life in which everything is wrong, in which you are in chains, in which you have cancer, in which you are confined to a wheelchair, in which you are stricken by poverty. In whatever instance, God can take just a little sliver of the last fraction of your life, and with it, He can change everything for everyone. This is what God can do. The question is whether we will willingly surrender our lives, or even just what remains of them, in whatever circumstances we find ourselves. Will we give our lives into His hands? I believe this is the question that arises at the end of the book of Acts. And I ask you this morning simply to answer the question.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.